This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Bobby McCumber. The distance between Karoo, where Godfrey Jordan Abage grew up, and Kono, where he lives now, is less than 15 kilometres. But Godfrey was a grown man before he discovered the West New Island custom of shark calling. Shark calling has been practiced in Kono for generations, and Godfrey is one of the locals fighting to ensure that it will continue for generations to come. Right now, amazingly, the shark population around Kono seems to be growing. But Godfrey and his fellow villagers are worried seabed mining will change that. Godfrey, domon mamaran.
Domon mamaran.
I think we need to start the scene first because you're not talking to me by the beautiful waters of New Island province at the moment. You're actually in Germany and it's in the middle of the night. How long have you been there?
I've been here for 2 months. Exactly.
How are you finding it over there in comparison to your home in Papua New Guinea?
Oh, well, maybe I came in the wrong time of the year. It's winter here at the moment. And, you know, coming from a warmer climate part of the world, Papua New Guinea, it was really different, was really strange and awkward and terrible when we first landed in Munich. It's unlike a corner where you roam around all the time outside. You're on the beach or you're on the road or you're in the bush or fishing or gardening.
So it's been 3 months since you left New Island. For those of us who have never been, can you explain to us what life is like there?
In Papua New Guinea, stories can be told from two different sides. If you're coming from the town area, like right now, or if you're coming from the village, it's a totally different setting. And I come from the village, which is every day people in the village, we normally go to the garden. That's always the plan the next day. You wake up, you go to the garden, or you go fishing, or you go hunting. Or if there are fish in the village, you go to the fish, or if there are other activities in the village, you go and attend the community activities or clan activity where probably there's a meeting, there's a gathering somewhere or something. But it's like every day, almost every day in the village is also scheduled for different activities. For example, like right now we have this community days on Mondays. That's from Kono, and Tuesdays, that's normally garden, and Wednesday, garden. And depending if you're going gardening or you're just building a new house, maybe you are out in the bush cutting trees or bamboos for the new house. Or maybe you're fixing your canoe, or maybe going out to the bush to collect materials for your fishing gears or other hunting gears. So it's a bit busy in some sense, but mostly people find themselves somehow meeting each other every day. Almost everyone in the village, in a week, probably we come across each other 3 times, 4 times in a week. So there's always a meeting the same person probably every time. During the week when you just going about doing your normal business in the village.
Godfrey, tell me about where you grew up in Karoo.
Okay, I grew up in Karoo village. That's the village. And my mom's from the west coast of New Ireland. It's on a village, but they got married to my dad, and then they decided to stay in Karoo, and that's where I grew up. But it's the life is very much the same. every day it's about gardening or it's about fishing or it's about maybe building a house or. But there was nothing much about the sap calling. There was nothing about the sap calling in Karoo, at Karoo. So after some times when I grew up, actually in primary school, when I learned about the sap calling, and I was just lucky. My mom comes from the village where this sap calling activity is practiced. So that was a privilege or an advantage for me to find out more about and to accept or to be happy about being in a community or in a village where this practice is common. But with the life in Karoo, it's the same as Kono. That's what we do in the morning. You wake up, you go to the garden, or you do other stuff in the village.
When did you first learn about shark calling and who told you about this?
It was during one of my school holidays when I was able to go with my mom to Kono. We walk across the island, the New Island Island, to the other side. And then during those days, there weren't so many cars, and sometimes we really have to walk. And we were offered sap meat for dinner. And they said, oh, your uncle caught this sap yesterday, and we have some today, so you guys can have it for dinner. And for me, I was wondering, how did they catch the sap? And then that's how the story became known. And I know we have the canoes on the beach. I know we have these things, but then this curiosity came when I was actually offered a sack meat for the meal at the dinner. And from there, I wasn't really into it, but I begin to have that interest. After some times when the first sap calling festival came and I saw, that was in 1994 in Kono, and I saw these few sharks were caught during the festival. And all the males in the village, those who can paddle into the sea, they had canoes, and they were like, more than 20 canoes, 30 canoes were out in the sea paddling back, and they were singing. And that really caught my interest from out there in the sea they were coming. But the stories were, Mom usually tell the stories about sap calling, how my uncle, her brother, was go out doing the sap calling. And I kept the stories with me until last year when I actually decided to move to Kono.
Now, Godfrey, I understand that there are some parts of the custom that are sacred and you can't talk about them. What can you tell me about how shark calling is done?
I think we'll divide the questions into two. One part of the questions, we talk about the hunting gears. And we can start with the canoe. I think these are the requirements when if you want to be a shark caller, if you thinking to join the rest of the sap callers, the first thing you are required to have is your own canoe. And you either ask someone to do it, or it's still very good if you learn how to do your own canoe or to make your own canoe. And then you have to have your own spears. Actually, now we are building spears out of iron rods. And just the front part, at the back, you used to rods attached to the iron rod. And then you have the cone shell. You have the rattling gear that's made out of coconut shell and bamboo rod, but you can attach bait to it, and then you will use to lure the into the trap. And then you have the main track, the sax track.
So you've got your canoe. You're saying that so the coconut shell is making a noise to lure the shark. So that is shaken to make the noise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why is it shaken? What does that do for the shark?
Normally, I think the sound, if you do the shaking of the shells in the sea, it's like you have the tuna or the atun at tuna. They're making these noises in the sea when they go after the bait. I don't know what would be the best word to describe it. I don't know how to describe it well, but you have this school of tuna or the school of fish, or how do you say it? It's they're in groups and they're fighting over for bait, and they make this. And that's where the shark hears from distance that there are tunas there, and that they can run. So this sound from the shells, the coconut shell moving into the cane, makes the exact sound. So what happens is the shark heads towards the sound.
So the shark thinks it's heading towards a school of fish or tuna, and then that's when it comes to the surface and... Right.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to the surface, what happens next?
You can see the shark if it approaches the canoe. From the top, from the canoe, you can see the shark. If it gets closer, then you use the bamboo rod with a bait. Bait is always a small fish caught from the reef, and it's attached to the bamboo rod, and then you guide the shark into the trap.
Do the men wear ceremonial outfits?
Normally, yes. But recently, especially for the first suckling that was done in group, that was probably way back then, I can remember. It's maybe 80s or 70s. The stories are still fresh, and that's the first time the shark calling was held in groups where a lot of shark callers were out there, and they did it for a feast, not for supper, not for a festival. They did it for a normal traditional feast.
And can you describe the outfits?
Normally, it's just a piece of lap-lap, or what you call wraparound.
Mm-hmm.
Is it topless? You wear nothing on, but on top, but you have this the lap, and I think that's it, with a few lips on your head, and maybe on the chest you have also some lips,
mm-hmm.
and normally these lips are special types of lips. They're smelly. They give off nice smells, and what else? Yeah, I think that's the kind of dressing people would do.
Can you explain how conch shells are used to communicate when you're out on the water?
There are different types of signals or calls, or if you are out in the sea. So the village people in the village will know. Somebody new catches a shark out in the sea. If you are someone who, an expert, how can I say, somebody who knows how to catch the shark, who has been doing it, there is a call sign, and people will know there is a shark that's been caught, but it's not from a new guy. This is someone who knows how to catch the shark. And I know there's nothing to excite them. They know, oh, it's a shark coming. But if a new guy catches the shark, people normally will be waiting around the beach, most especially the relatives, to greet the new shark caller. And also, if you are in danger in the sea and you're calling out for help, there is a call sign you do in the sea, out in the sea. Or the villagers, people in the villages can paddle towards your end if you need help.
What is sacred about the practice of shark calling?
Um, That's a good idea. That's a good question. And we believe so much that there are prayers, there are chants, there are songs, communicates with the spirits of the Saks and our ancestors. We have what is also called sacred places. For every clan, they have sacred places in the villages. And what happens is that, for example, if my uncle was one of the great Sakolas in the past, during prayer times, his name is invoked, or someone who is a very good Sakola in the past, they are called upon to help whoever that is doing the Sakoling. It's like a prayer that we use our ancestors in the prayers, their names, asking them for help to provide, to give us Sak. And it also requires fasting. And the cleansing also, the cleansing part of the ritual, you have to be really doing fasting. And if you are fasting, that means you are somewhere on the beach, away from the village. And cleansing will require you to bathe with different leaves from the bush, just to get yourself clean for the activity. There is a belief that if you're running around in the village, you attract impurities, or you attach yourself with spirits that will probably stop you from catching Sak. And you really have to do cleansing to purify yourself before you actually go to the sea. And it's also, there is a belief, if you don't do that, sometimes you can get killed by the Sak. Or you don't catch a Sak.
Why are sharks so important to people in Kono?
In the beginning, people in Kono and in other parts of New Ireland that we live in families, big families and big clans, a clan. And what happens is that if we're providing proteins for the clan or for the family, because we normally families there are big families, and we really have to get something that can provide enough protein for the family or the clan. And with the Sak, the size of the Sak, it can give us the amount of protein we need for our consumption. And also with the Sak meat, the taste of the Sak meat is really different from any other fish. And it's considered delicious, kind of delicious meat. Very expensive meat in the village. For example, if you're a visitor visiting Kono, and if they offer you a Sak meat, it means, firstly, you're most welcome to the village. Secondly, you are somebody special. And for example, if people from within Barok area, if someone from Pugalobo visits Kono and is a chief, and if people have sacks there, they will offer sack meat to him, knowing well that his status is different in the village, that he deserves a much valuable meat for his meal. That's why I think this sack meat is treated with this special regard, or special people highly treated the sack meat as a valuable meat. Or food within the village.
You haven't caught a shark yet. How many times have you tried to do it? And are you hoping that this will be the year when you get home?
I have a canoe at home. That was Beatles 2001. when I told him, and I decided that I actually do sack calling. But I was working at the same time, and I had to leave home for work. And last year, if you're married, you're not allowed to stay with your woman. You have to be out in the sea. And because I was also part of the organizing committee during the festival, it was difficult to be away from the other committees out in the sea. So I missed my chance last year. And hopefully this year, nothing stops me. I'm definitely doing it this year.
So the Shark Calling Festival has been held since 1994, and last year was hosted by Connell Village. What's the purpose of this festival, and what are you hoping to get out of it this year?
I think the 1994, as I remember, that was the first. And in between, there were a couple of festivals that was held by the villagers. But 2001, we started off. 2021, we started off. 2022, we missed the 2022. And last year, 2023, we held one. Okay. I was talking to my elders in the village, the chief tacklers, and I asked them the same question: what do we want to achieve out of the festivals? Since it is really becoming or reviving, or we want to, I wanted to see that the community sees the importance of shark calling, and not just that we want to do it every year for, and specifically, not just for tourism. I wanted something. If it's something that is to do with our spiritual connection, to improve the learning of our the chants, the prayers, or the songs, and maybe because there is more migration of our young people moving into other places or provinces for education, and they're missing out on these practices in the village. This festival, I think first objection, the purpose of it is to transfer the knowledge and the skills. And the knowledge and the knowledge means they have to be embedded in the spirit of our prayers. They have to be connected to our prayers, the calling, the chants, and the songs. Sometimes some cultures now, they're singing the songs, they're saying the prayers, but because the words are really ancient, they've really lost their meaning, and they're just singing the song because they know the song is sung like this, but the words or the lyrics in the songs doesn't mean anything anymore. I make sure it happens during holidays when there is a chance for everyone to learn something from the festival and from these gatherings.
You're listening to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Bobby McCumber, and I'm speaking with PNG's Godfrey Jordan Abugge. You've painted a really beautiful picture of the local traditions and the way of life in Connell, but you're worried that the way of life will change because of deep sea mining. In the past, there have been efforts to establish seabed mining projects in the Bismarck Sea, west of New Ireland. Have the people in your community been informed about plans for that project?
We did information relating to deep sea mining. Coming from the part of the west coast of New Ireland, west of New Ireland province, information is very scarce. And as we will all know, if you're not fully informed about something, you are probably will have a lot of doubts and also fear. And that is exactly what the village, most of us in the village are going through at the moment. We know about, we hear about mining, and we say, oh, that's a lot of money for us. On the other end, most of the villages on the west coast of New Ireland, they live by the sea. And most of our food hours, for example, proteins, comes mostly from the sea. And with the deep sea mining operating just few kilometers away from our coast, we are not really sure about what is going to happen to us. We know that it is going to threaten the our survival, because that's where we fish and we get our proteins. And we're really saying to the people we know, to the churches, to NGOs, we're telling them we are scared about this mining. We don't know what's going to happen to us, and we don't want to say yes to it.
Godfrey, for someone who grew up in a place like New Ireland in Papua New Guinea, what has it been like to live in Munich these past few months?
Yes, okay. That's a really big difference. You wake up in the morning, you are used to what do you call crow? And the first thing you hear in the morning, maybe 3 o'clock, that's the first one that goes off, or 1 o'clock, and the second one goes off as 4. But you don't hear it here. You probably, there's more noises, car, sometimes. And if you're really awake in the morning, and then you don't wake up to see an ocean, you wake up to see streets, and maybe the next plan to go out shopping or to have a coffee somewhere. Whilst in Kono, you wake up to the beautiful sea, ocean there, and the nice white sandy beaches. You go down to it, and the next thing is you have friends come around. You know, while right now in Munich, you the fiance is here, and you only by yourselves. You both are just sharing the day in, day out. So it's a bit different.
Germany is a landlocked country. How much do you miss the ocean?
I think I miss the ocean a lot.
What is it that you miss most about the ocean?
I think the crystal clear ocean, where you just swim freely. And also you have a bright sunny day, really bright sunny day. And almost every day you're looking out to bright sunny day and a nice sunset and a beautiful blue ocean. And I'm not saying Germany is bad or Munich is bad. I think for me it is an eye-opener also, but I'm learning by seeing what's happening around here. There are new things to see different from New Ireland. It's a good thing also to see. And I always tell my fiance that at Kono we own the time. If I want to go to the garden today, I go. If I don't want, I don't want to go to the garden. If I want to dive today, I go diving today. And if I don't want, I don't want. Yeah, everything is you are forced to do it because that's the time you have to do it. If you don't do it, you lose your job or you miss out on something. And it's different from how we consider time at Kono. But it's also good to learn some things from Germany.
Oh, well, Godfrey, I hope you get back to the ocean and back to your canoe soon. And I hope that this is your year to catch a shark. Thank you so much for your time, Godfrey.
You're welcome.
That's Godfrey Jordan Abage from the New Ireland village of Connor, where shark calling is an important and sacred custom. You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific. I'm Bobby McCumber. And to catch more great stories about incredible people from the Pacific, just search for ABC Pacific. This story was produced on the lands of the Turrbal and Yagara people.